This is Bob E equals MC square Hope again. Where was I? Oh, yes. Do you see this piece of white shiny metal about the size of, say, a package of cigarettes? See this piece in my other hand about the same size? Both are hunks of pure uranium. Now hold on to your seats. That's an atomic explosion. Why? What has man done to these two pieces of metal? Question number two is, what the devil is Hope doing talking about the atom?
This is Bob Trout in the NBC newsroom. Let me take 20 seconds to tell you about Mr. Hope and the atom. We call this series The Quick and the Dead. Tonight, the second of four transcribed programs based on Mr. Hope, just an average guy discovering the atom bomb.
And don't forget the hydrogen bomb.
Sorry, Bob, and the hydrogen bomb. Several weeks ago, Bob was in New York and one day decided he wanted to learn more about atomic energy. So we in the newsroom sent him to see William Lawrence of the New York Times, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner and the only reporter allowed backstage at the building of the bomb.
Lawrence held me spellbound, and I figured if he could make me understand it, anybody could get it. On last week's show, we went as far as 1942. At Stagg Field, Chicago, our scientists put enough pure uranium together to get a chain reaction going. A chain reaction meant that an atomic explosion was a distinct possibility. Is that right, Bill?
That's right, Bob.
Okay, let's get on with the bomb.
It was still a big gamble. At the rate the Stagg Field pile had been built, one single combat bomb would have taken 2,000 years to build.
But everything was taking so much time. What about the Germans? What were they doing?
That's what was in the back of every scientist's mind when they heard Goebbels ranting about secret weapons. Could we win the race? We all remember Dr. Einstein's warning.
Dear President Roosevelt, I understand that Germany has actually stopped the sale of uranium from the Czechoslovakian mines that she has taken over.
The Germans needed other elements besides uranium. To Hitler's atom bomb project, heavy water was also a vital ingredient.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Professor. What's heavy water?
I'll tell you about that, Bob, when we take up the hydrogen bomb. Let's just go along now by saying that heavy water was what the Nazis were pinning all their hopes on. It was worth its weight in diamonds.
Ever since 1940, British and American espionage teams had been watching the German heavy water operation at Vermont, Norway. In 1942, the Germans were forcing 3,000 pounds a year out of the plant. In 1943, it was stepped up to 10,000 pounds. In February of 1943, the Allies sent a team of Norwegians back to their native land in one of the most dangerous missions of the entire war.
My name is Gunnerside. I was the leader of a party of six Norwegians who dropped into Norway. Our mission was to destroy the heavy water plant at Vermark. We landed in a wind-driven snow at midnight, 16th February 1943. 5 days now, and the snowstorm still rages. Visibility zero. Two hands sick with cold. All of us very weary, slowly making our way toward the plant.
5 days later, the Norwegian team was at last able to see the massive smokestacks of the heavy water plant.
February 23rd. Klaus is to lead the way down the river and up the railroad tracks. We have practiced the attack on models for weeks in London. Every man knows his position. If a man is about to be taken prisoner, he must take his own life. 30 minutes past midnight, beginning of the 24th. Finally, I began to place the charge. Everything was as our models had showed. We checked the entire charge once again. We lit both fuses. Then we made a run for it. Down through the entrance, out onto the railroad tracks. 20 yards outside the basement, we heard the explosion.
The TNT charge did the rest. The plant was completely destroyed.
Meanwhile, the war had moved into high gear. The invasion of North Africa was underway. Hitler's armies were at the gates of Stalingrad, and the Manhattan District, the code name for America's atomic energy program, was officially activated.
My name is Keller, Army Engineers. I spent 3 years in the Belgian Congo thinking I was sweating out the silliest mission of the war, mining uranium. Uranium was not a rare metal. Used to cost a couple of bucks a pound if anybody would take it. Suddenly, we were shipping hundreds of tons per day. Atom bombs? We never heard of such a thing.
That's where the manufacturing of the bomb starts, Bob. Uranium comes out of the mines mixed with other ores. Black, dirty, and contaminated. Pitch blend, they call it. Meanwhile, in February of 1943, the most fabulous city ever dreamed by man rose from a barren plain. Oak Ridge was open for business.
I am K.D. Nichols, District Engineer of the Manhattan District. Until 1943, I didn't know what $1 billion was, let alone $2 billion.
In the heart of the Tennessee Valley Authority, between the Smokies and the Cumberland Mountains, is Oak Ridge. The local inhabitants, working the worn out land using methods of the past, were suddenly projected into the 21st century.
My job was security. They called us the creeps.
That's Colonel Bill Considine.
At Oak Ridge, we had to build magnets, each one about half the size of a city block. We needed copper, almost unlimited copper, with which to wind these magnets. And with the war on, there just wasn't that much copper in the world. Silver, as you know, is just as good or even better a conductor of electricity as copper. So we called the mint in Washington and borrowed $400 million worth of silver to wind the magnets with. We moved the silver by flat car. And to this day, those magnets at Oak Ridge are still wound with silver. We used to call it the sub-treasury.
It was the best use any silver was ever put to.
Oh, that's a great story, Bill. But what exactly were they doing at Oak Ridge? Was that the atom bomb factory?
No, Bob. The actual factory was at Los Alamos. Oak Ridge was the source of pure uranium. General Motors, for example, makes cars in Detroit, where they get their steel from Pittsburgh. Oak Ridge had the enormous task of taking the raw uranium and turning it into usable 235 and then shipping it to the factory at Los Alamos to be fabricated into bombs.
All right, Bill, we were on our way. What was holding up the show? We can do anything in America, can't we?
Anything but outwit the sheer cussedness of nature.
Well, what happened?
They suddenly discovered that you can't split all uranium, only a special kind, uranium-235.
So, what's the problem? Let's get some uranium-235.
That was the rub. Uranium-235 and uranium-238 come together. They're twins, just like Tweedledum and Tweedledee, shaped alike, look alike, and they go together. They are inseparable.
Oh, now, let me get that.
Get this. The scientists discovered that we could use only the lighter one, only the uranium-235.
But you said they couldn't be separated.
That was why Oak Ridge was built, to do just that job, to get enough pounds of uranium-235 without 238 in it. When we could get a few pounds of that, we could assemble a bomb.
Well, is that where the big magnets come in?
Exactly, Bob. That's why we had to borrow the $400 million worth of silver. You can thank Professor Ernest Lawrence for that.
We call those giant magnets racetracks. They were half the size of a city block. On the inside of the track, we had vats with vaporized pure uranium in them, heated to a temperature of several thousand degrees. Then we sprayed this hot uranium from a sprinkler inside the racetrack across the magnet. In the magnet apparatus itself, we had a series of containers, each with two small holes in it. One hole was near the edge, the other a few inches further away. This is what happened. The hot uranium in a thin blue stream would start across the magnet, Tweedledum and Tweedledee going through the air together. But immediately as they crossed the magnet, the stream would be pulled down, the light atoms coming down at one place, heavy atoms going a little further, dropping into another hole. We had trapped them separately, atom by atom. In one barrel, we had unlimited amounts of the unusable 238. But in the other, we had just a speck of the precious lighter U-235. At the end of a day, we would have perhaps a fraction of an ounce. It took thousands and thousands of hours for each barrel to collect a single ounce of the usable uranium. But we had many magnets and thousands of barrels. Slowly, oh, so slowly, we were scraping together sufficient uranium-235 to make a bomb.
But supposing we didn't get enough together? Weren't we putting all our eggs in one basket?
That's where General Grove deserves a lot of credit. At Oak Ridge, he tried Lawrence's magnetic method, and they also set up a gaseous diffusion method under Professor Dunning of Columbia. If either worked, we would have a bomb. But even that wasn't enough insurance. A third plant was set up at Hanford in the state of Washington.
For making sure we had enough uranium for an atom bomb.
I didn't say uranium, Bob. I said material. At Hanford, they were not making uranium, but plutonium.
More physics. Go ahead, take 60 seconds.
I can do it in 30, Bob. Plutonium is a derivative of uranium.
Of the precious kind, or can you use the wet kind, the U-238?
238. The kind we have most of, thank the Lord. Professor McMillan, just a youngster, discovered that plutonium also might be used in a bomb. Plutonium is the first element man ever learned to make himself. You take uranium and add one neutron, and it becomes neptunium.
Then what do you do?
Nothing. You leave it alone, and in about 3 days, neptunium turns into plutonium. Just like cider, turning into vinegar.
But what about Robert Oppenheimer? I thought he was one of the big shots in this story.
He was, Mr. Hope. But his time had not yet arrived. Oppie, as we called him, was setting up the factory for assembling the bomb at Los Alamos. But in 1943 and 1944, it was still all on paper. They were like soldiers with broomsticks for guns. There still wasn't enough uranium-235 or plutonium to put together a bomb.
And still the millions kept going up.
That's right. And every once in a while, even Stimson and Conant, who had given the go-ahead, would get a little nervous and wonder, supposing we bang those two hunks of metal together and nothing happens. For a time, Robert Patterson, Undersecretary of War, got nervous over the billions of dollars he and Stimson were authorizing and sent out a special investigator named Madigan to check it.
Mr. Secretary, you and Mr. Stimson got nothing to worry about. If this thing works, they won't investigate anything. And if it doesn't work, they won't investigate anything else.
And all this time, all this remained a complete secret.
Those at Oak Ridge didn't know there was a Hanford. Hanford didn't know about Los Alamos. It was already June of 1944, and the war seemed to be passing them by.
General Dwight D. Eisenhower, people of Western Europe. A landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe.
And in June of 1944, long before the first uranium or plutonium was shipped to Los Alamos, a special B-29 combat group was activated. Its leader, Colonel Paul Tibbetts, age 29.
Gentlemen, welcome to the 509th and to Wendover Field. As you know, this is a special group. I wish I could tell you something. I can only tell you that we will train and train and train. Someday you will all know why.
At Los Alamos, Professor Oppenheimer and his boys waited for the first purified uranium. And from now on, Bob, when I say uranium, I mean uranium or plutonium. Both were used. Finally, early in 1945, the first cubes, like cubes of sugar, began coming true.
I was a courier. Must have made 30 trips from Oak Ridge to Los Alamos. Never knew what it was I carried in that case strapped to my wrist. Sometimes I went by plane, sometimes by special car, sometimes by train. Wasn't until they dropped the bomb that I knew what I was carrying.
I was one of Oppie's boys. Watched the Wizard of Los Alamos do his job. This was the inner sanctum of the whole deal. Our job was the easiest to explain and the hardest to do. To make a bomb, you simply take some uranium, as